You are listening to the Better Together podcast, brought to you by the National Association of Free Will Baptists.
Welcome to the Better Together podcast, where we look at ways that we can work together to help each other as we try to minister and do the Lord's work. Today we have Pastor Jose Luis Rodriguez. He's the former pastor there of the Ebenezer Free Will Baptist Church in Miami, where he was pastor for almost two decades. Today, he's serving at Welch College, working with Hispanic Training Institute, teaching theology classes, and doing some important work there. He graduated from Welch College back in 1994. He also has completed work at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School and is working on, I believe, doing a D.Min at New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary, right?
Yes, sir.
You've been very busy. So how do you like it here in Tennessee now?
Oh, we love it here. We're excited to be here. We miss Florida and Miami, of course.
Yes.
But it's a great change. Yes.
Well, we are glad you're here. And we've brought Jose in to talk to us today about the gospel in urban settings. So how can we be more effective in taking the gospel into urban settings?
Well, that's a great question, and that has been my life, because since I graduated in 1994 from Welch, I went back to Miami, which is a, you know, urban city.
Yes.
And very cosmopolitan city, we may even say that.
Yes.
And it has been my passion to be there, to work among different peoples, and to take the gospel to that city. So in order to start the conversation, probably we need to look at the need to be in that setting, and to understand that I think Jesus is still interested in going to the cities.
Yes.
And it is there when we are going to face a lot of difficulties. We're going to face social issues. We're going to face racial issues. We're going to face political corruption. Mm-hmm. We're going to face all that. Sometimes we try to get away from that to make ourselves more comfortable. But I believe it is there where the church must be present, where the church must have a clear vision to be part of God's kingdom and go there and minister there. So that will be my first.
That's where you're coming
from. To see the need to be there, see the necessity to minister among those people.
So especially we as Free Will Baptists have been in rural settings for many, many years. And you might even say America was more of a rural country for a while, but that's not the case anymore. They're moving to the big cities, aren't they? And I have to say, I was talking to your son, Samuel, one day, and I said, "Hey, how do you like it here in Tennessee?" And he's like, "It's very dark. It's very dark at night." He's talked about the lights are there at night. Miami is lit up, and talked about it being quiet as well, how much quieter it is. So it's a very different in the city than it is in much of rural America, but much of the United States, much of the population, and you could say that for the world even, they're moving to cities. So you're saying we need to kind of answer the call and say we need to be willing to go to the cities, and so how can we effectively minister to our folks in our cities?
When we go to the cities, I have seen two tendencies in ministering in the cities. Mm-hmm. One is to not do any contextualization of the gospel at all.
Okay.
I'm going to do it this way because this is the only way, and I'm not going to change anything in going into the city.
Mm-hmm.
The other one that I see most of the time is the over-contextualization of the gospel.
Uh-huh. Okay. So when you say, when you say not looking at the context, would an example be going in and preaching like one might have done the South, maybe? For example, I think of Tim Keller, kind of coming in, and he has a argument, if you will, but he's explaining the gospel almost verse by verse in a very calm manner, you might say. Is that what you're getting at, kind of like with contextualization?
Yes, sir.
What about over over-contextualization?
Well, the problem with over-contextualization comes in when we try to, when we believe that we are the ones making the gospel understandable to people.
Uh-huh.
It is my job for them to understand.
Uh-huh.
And it is not my job.
Uh-huh.
It is the Holy Spirit's job
okay.
to do that part. Now, I do have a part on it. I do have the responsibility to go to them
mm-hmm.
and to be among them and to talk to them and to see how they are
mm-hmm.
in order to relate to them
mm-hmm.
accordingly. And when I step up into the pulpit, I'll use their life stories.
Mm-hmm.
I use their context in order to bring the word
yes.
without changing the actual gospel.
Uh-huh.
So okay. that's my point.
Yes.
In trying to make the gospel understandable to all people,
mm-hmm.
we over-contextualize the gospel.
That's, okay.
That has been my experience being in the city and looking at different situations and looking at different people doing church
mm-hmm.
within the city.
Okay.
And in doing so, I think we are not trusting what God is doing. What God is able to do,
uh-huh.
we are trusting our own abilities in taking the gospel. It's what I can do,
mm-hmm.
what really is going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And now what the Lord is able to do through my preaching, my teaching, my life among the people in the city.
Excellent. So what you're saying is learn as much about the environment that you're in, learn as much about the city where you're ministering, and you are using their examples, you're using their life stories and so forth, but it's almost like you're saying don't water the gospel down. The gospel is the gospel, and the Holy Spirit calls people. And so in our contextualization, we do not want to do that to the point that the truth of the gospel is somehow lost in all of that. The gospel, the Holy Spirit will help people who want to respond and listen to hear the gospel and understand it.
I totally agree. I believe there is a concept, especially among evangelicals, among Americans,
mm-hmm.
that we have the perfect framework for
mm-hmm.
the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
Being in America,
uh-huh.
being part of the culture or the American culture automatically makes us
A little bit better
yes,
or something.
Or,
yes,
or we got some extra knowledge that is going to help us
mm-hmm.
in accept the gospel and live out the gospel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
I believe every culture, including the American culture, the gospel becomes a crazy thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a blowing of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
not normal
mm-hmm.
to believe that somebody came from heaven and died on a cross and was buried and then came back to life.
Mm-hmm.
That is only possible when you allow the Holy Spirit to come and to convince you and to do a work in you
mm-hmm.
so you can respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
But in my effort to make that understandable, I do all kind of things, or I can believe all kind of weird stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like this culture might be more prompt to answer to the gospel than the other one.
Mm-hmm.
So let me change according to the culture, and I'm changing actually the gospel in its entirety.
Uh-huh.
And that's my concern,
yes.
in, especially when you go to a big city where
mm-hmm.
you have so many people from so many different places,
mm-hmm.
and you're there and you may feel lost.
Yes.
Now, what can I do? How can I do it?
Mm-hmm.
And all that comes to your mind. And it is because of your passion
mm-hmm.
in taking the gospel to people. I refuse to believe that a true pastor or a true person that has been called by God is just doing things because, you know, some. I don't want to believe that.
Yes.
Even
yes.
though it might be a possibility. But it's your passion to reach out to people that takes you to do things that probably are not biblical.
Mm-hmm.
Because you want them in the church. You want them to be saved. Mm-hmm. And then you said, what can I do? And the answer is the same that Paul used in the early church. Mm-hmm. Preach the gospel.
Preach the gospel.
Explain the gospel. Mm-hmm. Present the gospel. And let the Holy Spirit do what he has to do.
Mm-hmm.
Again, let me explain this and let me be clear. We all do some level of contextualization,
mm-hmm.
because we are not Jews in Palestine in the first century.
Right, right.
None of us.
Yes.
So we do contextualize to a certain point,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't mean that you have to take the gospel and transform that into something else in order to attract, you know, so many people.
Mm-hmm.
Because you may attract them in doing some other things that are not actually church or the gospel.
Now let's hear from one of our partners, Free Will Baptist Board of Retirement. Will you be prepared for your future ministry? For over 50 years, the Board of Retirement has successfully assisted Free Will Baptist employees prepare for their financial future. Through the Board of Retirement's 403b9 retirement plan, employees of Free Will Baptist churches, schools, and organizations can make elective pre-tax and Roth contributions and choose how they want to diversify their savings through multiple values-based investment options. The Board of Retirement exists to help you reach your financial goals and fulfill your ministry purpose. For more information, visit boardofretirement.com or call us at 877-767-7738.
You are listening to the Better Together podcast, brought to you by the National Association of Free Will Baptists.
You were there ministering at Ebenezer for nearly two decades. I was able to visit your church a couple of times and be among your people, a very, what we would say today, a diverse congregation. So it looks to me like you guys were doing quite a good job of reaching the people there in the city. Tell us a bit about how you were able to do that by doing exactly what you're talking about here.
When I went there at Ebenezer, which is probably a tremendous example of what we can do among Hispanics in a city.
Mm-hmm.
When I went there, the church was probably 90 to 95% Cuban American.
Mm-hmm.
The first Cuban who left Cuba in the 60s and then established themselves in Miami and all that. And then a few from that first generation that was either born on or raised in Miami, just a few. Because we lost that the first generation because of the English language. They preferred English, not Spanish, and the church remained totally Spanish-speaking.
Uh-huh.
So that was the situation when I got there.
Mm-hmm.
And my dream was for the church to look like the community.
Yes.
Because we were there. And it was not only a Cuban-American community, even though it's still, you know, the majority, but we had so many people from so many different countries and some different, you know, nationalities and backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
And what did I do? What did we do was just to approach everyone at the same level and to love them at the same level and to relate to them as much as possible, trying to break all those cultural barriers that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Now, many people in America may think that because you are Hispanic, you're automatically Mexican.
Mm-hmm.
Not long ago, somebody told us, well, you make some Mexican food because you're Mexican. No, we're not Mexican.
No.
And we cannot make Mexican food because we don't know how to make Mexican food, even though we love Mexican food.
Yes.
And when you go into the Hispanic culture, you got many different perspectives, many different people coming together. The social economic background is totally different. The educational background is different. The way we think is different. The people from the Caribbean are totally different than the people from South America.
Mm-hmm.
How can you unite all those people in one single church and still love each other? And that's exactly what happened in Miami. How God did it.
So
the gospel.
Let's just make it clear. That would be like Canadians, Americans, some Europeans, and not to mention people from the north and the south and the west and the east and so forth. So in other words, you had all those different groups there. We have a tendency, we have to be careful that to not understand, contextualize the different groups, different backgrounds. And you had them all there in Miami and there at Ebenezer.
Yes, sir. Well, at the end, before we left, we had a lady from Germany, and a gentleman from England. They both married Spanish-speaking people, and they were part of the church, worshiping there. They learned the language. But at the end, we had even English-speaking services at the same time, trying to provide to those who prefer English instead of Spanish. But at the end of the day, Dr. Moody, how we did it was just presenting the gospel to all people in their context there in Miami, and letting the Holy Spirit work in their lives and be there for them, in accepting them, in loving them, in understanding them. Leadership has a lot to do with it.
It does.
It does.
So one way I observed, though, you did some things that, well, one thing I have never seen, you did Awana on a Friday night. It's almost like someone would need to go visit to get a real sense of it, but you were very involved in your community. And so sometimes I fear we get upset with our community, whereas you were bringing the community in. And so if you're having a Awana on a Friday night, you can know that some people are going to drop their kids off and they're going to go have date night, and you apparently were just cool with that. So part of what I think we also have to understand is you were sharing the gospel by ministering to the people in your community.
Being there for them. Mm-hmm. And that was the point. We even told some parents, this is a great opportunity for you to come and drop off your children. Mm-hmm. We'll take care of them. And you go out and do grocery, or just, you know, go out and have a dinner and come back and pick them up at 9:30.
Right.
It was 7:30 to 9:30.
Right.
So it was 2 hours that they were free. Now, at the same time, we always offer on Friday night a class for adults.
Mm-hmm.
If they prefer to stay because they wanted to be there, there was a class for them. And I was involved in that class, and I would teach that class and be part of that and try to talk to them.
Right.
And that was a way to bring them over to the church as well. We did VVS during the summertime.
Yes.
We did all that we could in order to open up ourselves to the community.
Mm-hmm.
We started on October the 31st, at Harvest Fest in Miami, in our church, and that was totally open to the entire community for them to come and be part of that. And we did it outside so people could see that we were out there, that we were not inside the church per se, but we were out there for them. Yeah, be there for people. Open up yourselves to the community. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are a lot of problems in the community, a lot of things that you can complain about it, but how about helping out the community?
But I want our listeners just to make note of that, because many of us will have like programs on Wednesday nights or even Sunday nights, and some of us have complained how parents will bring their kids and drop them off and not come to our Bible studies and so forth. What you guys just naturally are like, hey, bring your kids, we'll indoctrinate them with the gospel, you know, and go eat your food and come back, or we've got a Bible study for you. And it's almost like it's almost a psychological approach. You can be here with your kids and you can have the Bible study with us. And so it's not a guilting them into staying.
No.
And then you mentioned October 31st, that's when the community is often out and about on that evening. And so some of those folks will be part of the church. Some, it's just a way of them to learn the church as well.
Yes, sir. That's what we did. And we were not, I was not uncomfortable with the idea of them leaving the children and coming back later. That was a way to promote our church, promote our programs, to promote the gospel within the city. Again, some of them were finally into the church because of that. They came, they were invited to the class, they would show up maybe once or twice, check it out. Oh, I like this. They prayed for me. We learned about the Bible, and they stayed
Yes.
And they were later even members of the mm-hmm. congregation. So that was a way, an opportunity to open up for them without making them do it.
Right, right. And it's also, it's the church is giving, the church is ministering, instead of saying, hey, would you come and buy a Christmas tree from us? Or hey, would you, you know, instead of the church asking for something from the community, the church is there providing for the community. Well, what are some other ways that you think of or that you've used that we can take the gospel into the urban settings?
Well, again, we had also a daycare ministry.
Yes. I forgot about that.
We had a preschool ministry.
Yes.
And we use that as a way to also get connection to
yes.
the people there. We always, for example, we always try to keep the cost
right.
lower than any other private daycare in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And we would promote that as a way of saying, listen, we are here to minister to you instead of charging extra
right.
amount, you know, like most people around, we will lower that so we can be a blessing to you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, through that ministry, we will make contact with the parents and try to connect them to the church.
Right.
Again, you cannot frustrate yourself when you see that you don't have a lot of responses, but you're there for them.
Mm-hmm.
For example, we would have at least twice a year the entire school to come on Sunday morning
mm-hmm.
To have a presentation, mm-hmm. Easter and Christmas. The children will sing. They do their little presentation for those occasions, and we will invite all the parents.
Mm-hmm.
What we found out is that not only the parents, because the Hispanic culture is more like an extended family.
Right.
So the grandparents will come, the aunts and uncles will come.
Yes.
And then at the end, we probably have the best services
there
ever
you go.
Because they would come to church to see their family members, the little ones participating.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a great opportunity to take the gospel on that specific occasion. During Thanksgiving, for example, we had a Thanksgiving breakfast for the parents, just for the parents and their families.
Mm-hmm.
The church was not involved in mm-hmm. a sense of just being there. It was just the school. We will bring them to a mini service.
Yes.
We would have a song, a Bible reading. I would present the gospel to
mm-hmm.
them. Then the children will come in, do their presentation.
Yes.
And then we will have a breakfast for the parents.
Mm-hmm.
Another opportunity to talk about Jesus, to mm-hmm. talk about the gospel, to present the gospel in love to them. They didn't have to pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
It was not an extra cost.
Mm-hmm.
We would give it to them because we want them to know the gospel.
Right.
So you find different ways. You got to be there for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All the time, and show yourself that you're interested in them
right.
As you bring them into the family.
Well, that's wonderful, and you charged for that, but it was a very, it was, as you said, less than the others in the area, but it was a safe place for
yes.
them to bring their kids, high quality.
Yes.
We need to mention that. One of the things you will notice about the work there at Ebenezer is it's done with excellence, and the music, whatever programs are put on, they honor the Lord and do it with excellence. And that's contagious. That's helpful to the community. It's a way of ministering the gospel to them as well. Well, you've talked about this in an urban setting. You've talked about there were Hispanic and Latinos that, but there were Anglos at the church as well. And I noticed when you're talking about we would have programs like that too at Tippett's Chapel, and it's also something the Anglos do. You know, they'll bring their aunts and the uncles and the grandparents. This is something whatever setting one may find themselves could use some of these same techniques, or basically just use the gospel to reach your community. Well, we so appreciate the important work that you're doing, my friend, and we appreciate what you've already done. We're glad you're here in our area, and we just pray that God will continue to use you, and we thank you for coming and sharing with us today.
Thank you. I want to add something very quick.
Yes.
When you try to do something like this in an urban setting,
yes.
you got to be very intentional with the staff. For example, when we were able to bring a youth pastor, I always wanted to be an Anglo pastor.
Yes.
And the two that we had during my pastorate there, they were Anglo, because I wanted them to minister to the next generation.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to have intentionally a multiracial staff,
mm-hmm.
instead of just being Hispanics,
mm-hmm.
or just Cubans on the staff,
gotcha.
Or just Americans. I wanted everyone to be involved. I would have needed probably 15 or 20 more years to involve probably African Americans,
mm-hmm.
or Asian, or the Asian community, and be more multi-ethnic within the
mm-hmm.
staff. But that's important,
yes.
because people are looking from the outside, say, oh, I can be a part of it because I'm represented there.
Yes.
Even with a deacon board, for example, I try to mix it up.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just being Cuban American,
yes.
let's bring now the new communities so they can have a representation within the church.
So what you're saying is be very intentional about your leadership.
Yes, sir.
And so it's important for the community that you're reaching, but also the community you're trying to reach. You alluded to this earlier. The first generation spoke Spanish. The second generation spoke English.
Mm-hmm.
And so probably that second generation would have been attracted to having Anglos, to having other people on staff and in leadership. And so all of us, if we want to reach, for example, you're more of an Anglo church, but you want to reach Latinos and Hispanics, you need to put some of them in leadership positions. And people see that, and actually it's even attracted to the people you already have, you know, and especially their children.
And that is contextualization.
Yes, it is.
Without changing
yes.
the actual message of the gospel.
We thank you for stopping by to speak with us today. Thank you for your important work there that you did at Ebenezer, and then what you're doing now at Welch College, and how you've been serving the whole National Association of Free Will Baptists all through the years with your translating and all the other things that you do. Thank you, Jose Luis, for stopping by to be with us today.
Thank you. My pleasure.